Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Shannon Hood, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. You may be listening to Fat Guys in the Movies right now if you figured out our April Fool's prank we have pulled with this episode. If you haven't, well, this is completely gendered version. You're not listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. You're listening to, probably sounds like a Judas Priest album from the 70s. First of all, before we move along, and Shannon can tell, thank you, Shannon. We actually obviously have a guest host because that's not Neil. But before we talk to Shannon about where she's from and everything, real quick, get out of the way. Where you can get a hold of us: fatguysatthemovies.com. Catch us on iTunes. Search Fat Guys at the Movies. We should pop right up along with Fozzie Bear's podcast. You can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM for Fat Guys at the Movies. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's very important because we'll explain to you about the super cool April Fool's Day contest that we're having going on right now. So happy April Fool's. And Shannon, why don't you tell us how to get a hold of you and who you are? We've been on the show a couple times before, but let's have you talk about it right now.
Yeah, thanks for having me back again. I really enjoy doing the show, so thank you. I am managing editor of frothygirls.com, pop culture website. We have a lot of movie stuff on there because we're all big movie fans. You can follow me on Twitter at frothygirl, twitter.com, and our website is frothygirls.com.
Awesome. And like I said, yeah, thanks for being on again. It's been sort of a crazy couple weeks here. This 2011 is incredibly busy. So again, yes, thank you very much for coming on the show, and good to have you again. Real quick before we move on, let's talk about April Fool's Day. If you figured out how to pull this thing backwards and play it in the proper order, we want to hear from you, and there is a prize involved. So the first person to email fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com with the subject April Fools, and say what happened, why the show is different, and the specially, very special, you got to tell us what the code word is. And the code word is, you ready for this, Shannon?
Yes.
You see, you don't even know what the code word is.
No, I don't.
That's how secretive I've been. Sasquatch.
Nice.
Sasquatch is the code word. I don't care how you spell it, as long as I know it's Sasquatch. Put that in an email to fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can call 740-205-6456 and say, hey, Fat Guys, you guys were in reverse this week, and the code word is Sasquatch, and you will win a Blu-ray, a brand new Blu-ray from my collection. It'll probably be, there's a couple choices, but you also got to let us know your email or phone number, and we can get in touch with you. Well, email's easiest. And we will get in touch with you. And like I said, the first person to do that wins the prize. So that's kind of cool, don't you think?
Very cool.
I hope so. You know what I just sounded like when I said that? If you watch a, like a talk show, like Conan or Jay Leno, and somebody comes in and he's like, I do this for a living because it's cool, right? And he like doesn't get the response from the audience. He's like, right? Yeah. And he like looks at the audience and like expects people to clap.
Needing a little validation today.
I know. I feel so pathetic. I feel like Miley Cyrus on Saturday Night Live when she says, like, at least she sang. Did you see her on Saturday Night Live?
I saw parts of it. Yes.
She made this thing about in the song. She's like basically saying, you know, isn't it at least it's better than using a bong or something like that.
Yes, I remember
and like,
that.
And like no one like really clapped or anything. And she's like, right. And she like was, and I'm just like, okay, now you just lost it.
Reeked of desperation.
Yeah, it was kind of sad. Anyways, all Miley Cyrus problems aside, let's talk about movies this week. This is a great week for movies.
It is.
And a lot of people forget that April, it's not a dumping ground, but it's like where a lot of movies come out that they need to get out before, they need to get it out by a certain time, but they'll just get lost in the summer.
Yeah.
So the first one is Source Code, in which Jake Gyllenhaal relives the last 8 minutes of a train ride before a terrorist attack, hoping to discover the people behind it.
Welcome back, Captain Stevens.
Where am I?
You are inside the Source Code.
What is the Source Code?
It's a computer program, Captain.
Source Code enables you to cross over into another man's identity in the last 8 minutes of his life.
At 7:48 this morning, a bomb exploded
on a train outside of Chicago, killing everyone on board. A man named Sean Fentress was on that train. He is now you. Think, Captain, remember back. Who bombed the train?
Let me know what you think. You saw this. Did you see this at South By?
No, actually, I saw it before South By, so it's not super fresh in my mind. I saw it, like, right before I went. I really enjoyed it. I was anxious to see what the follow-up to Moon... Is it Duncan Jones who directed this?
Yeah, yeah, Man Moon and Twitter.
And I really liked Moon. I don't know about you, but, he was so good in Moon, and I think everyone was kind of anxious to see what he did with this next movie, because it is a bigger budget, it has bigger stars.
It's way more mainstream than Moon was.
Yes, but it's still a mind trip. The last minute blew my mind. Literally, I could not comprehend it.
You had to pick it up off the floor. It was like borrowing Charlie Sheen's brain for...
You know, quantum physics is not my forte, but I thought that he did a really good job. As we said, he has to go back and... Jake Gyllenhaal's character has to go back and relive the last 8 minutes of this guy's, or several people's lives, to figure out how this bomb went off on a train.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Groundhog's Day, but... I thought he did a really good
job. Only fewer laughs.
But didn't you think he did a good job, Duncan, that is, of making every single trip back just a little bit different, so you're always looking for something?
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, okay, the coffee spill was different, or this. And so it really kept your mind alert, and you didn't fall into boredom while you were watching this.
What I liked about that is I tend to like those. First of all, I like these sort of Twilight Zone-y kind of things. These speculative,
I do too.
And it's been a great year because you also had like the Adjustment Bureau and you had Limitless. Both of these are very they're sort of outside the realm of normal movies. But I like those movies that kind of retell things, like Run Lola Run did that, and Vantage Point. I think wasn't that one with Dennis Quaid and the news broadcast? It had another bomb going off.
That was a Secret Service one, wasn't it?
I think so.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy that kind of. Some people find that repetitive and boring, but I like because it's always either coming from a different angle or showing something different, and I've always enjoyed that.
Well, my point was it could have been repetitive and boring, and it wasn't.
But it wasn't. No. You did a great job.
Yeah, and I enjoyed Jake Gyllenhaal in it. He's grown on me a lot in the last couple of years. I never was a big, huge fan of his, and I liked him in Love and Other Drugs, and now this. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of jumping on board with him, and. Yeah, I thought it was a nifty movie, and I probably am going to go back. I think it merits a second viewing.
Yeah, and it's surprising because it's like by Summit.
Yeah,
which normally it's like their entire slate is like Twilight and crap, and of course Twilight often falls into that.
Yeah,
as well. But they did like Red, and everything else was terrible that Summit has done.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. I'd like to point this out for everybody who has been complaining about, oh, this Hollywood's nothing but sequels and remakes and blah, blah, blah. This week, no remakes, no sequels. Last week, only one sequel, but it's a logical sequel because it's based on a book. It's not like rebooting some franchise, which was Diary of a Wimpy Kid. We had like 3 weeks with just like very little of that.
Yeah.
We had plenty of it this summer.
Yeah.
But. So Official Fact Arc is great for Source Code. I'm saying it rocks.
I'm saying it rocks as well.
Awesome. That was really good. Congratulations to Duncan. I was going to call him Duncan Moon, which makes him sound like a cult figure.
Yes.
Or a rock star. So anyways, we got to go to a break.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yay.
The next movie we're going to review is Hop.
That's right.
Live action CGI mix. It's a movie about a rabbit who is destined to take on the job of the Easter Bunny.
The Easter Bunny works one day a year, travels the world, and is beloved by everyone. Who wouldn't want a job like that?
Evie! You're about to be crowned the Easter Bunny.
Dad, I want to drum in a band. I want to see the world.
Eevee, the Easter Bunny sees every country in one night.
Don't want to be the Easter Bunny.
4,000 years of tradition doesn't end just because one selfish bunny doesn't feel like doing it.
Kevin, what did you think of Hop?
You know what? I was terrified of Hop when I first saw the trailers of it. And it's has, for no other reason than I was like, it is what every other critic is going to be like, oh, it's a stupid kids movie, you know, that kind of thing. And,
yep.
I just didn't know if the premise was sustainable for just the scant 90 minutes that the movie was. I'll have to say, even though it's not a great movie, it was okay. You know, it was better than like Marge Needs Moms in terms of a kids movie, but it was, you know, and they're billing it as from the makers of Despicable Me. It was not Despicable Me.
No, it's not.
Not nearly as good as that movie.
It's much sillier than Despicable Me. Yeah. I took my girls, I imagine you know, we're kind of in a unique position because you and I both have kids.
How old are your girls?
They're 6 and 8.
Okay. Oh, mine are. You have to give me your phone number, and I'll have to stick them on them in about 5 years when they turn into teenagers.
Yes.
Because mine are 9 and 7, so they're like right at the correct age.
But you know, there's not that many critics I know. There aren't that many critics I know that have kids, and I think that you and I, we come from a, you know, unique perspective when we see these movies, and I can look at it as a parent, mm-hmm. and not just a critic. And I think these movies need to be out there so kids have something to watch, and not every single kids movie is going to be fantastically smart. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. This was a really silly movie. It's cute as can be. Yeah. The main, the rabbit is darling. He's voiced by Russell Brand. I did think it was kind of weird that like Chelsea Handler was in this movie. Russell Brand.
They definitely have an adult slate of comedians.
Well, and the Playboy Mansion is in it. You know, I mean, what kid knows what that is? I was kind
of
like,
no, you know what? It's because of like the Girls Next Door show. Because it gets played and stuff like that. It was funny. I got sent once the DVD of one of the series. And my kids, they were like 4 or something. And I pulled it out of the, and they're like, oh. And I'm like, trust me, you're going to be raiding my collection in about 5 or 6 years.
Right. It's not yet, but. Well, my kids had no clue. You know, that whole Playboy Mansion thing went right over their heads. And so
but
there
they handled
definitely
the
some
comedy.
Adult jokes in here.
Well, they handled that comedy well, I thought. I mean, like him showing up at the Playboy, I don't know if that was Hef doing the voice. He have a little speaker thing. But they didn't at all tip their hand at anything about what Playboy was.
Exactly. You had to just know what it was. Yeah. So it's not, it's not going to corrupt your children or anything. But, you know, I thought it was okay. I laughed quite a few times. I thought it was a really cute movie. It's not original at all. It's basically a rehash of tons of Christmas movies.
Well, it's the Santa Claus. Because the whole point is it's the rabbit doesn't want to be the Easter Bunny, but the guy does. And so it kind of it swerves into the Santa Claus, like especially in the third act.
That's what it reminded me of, too. I was like, that's totally the Santa Claus. But, you know, that's okay. We don't really have any Easter movies.
We have Easter movies, but they're all like religious movies, like The Passion of Christ and
I just
the
mean, like,
story
there's nothing
story.
Like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for Easter, you know.
You get a couple TV specials, like there's that the first Easter the world's the first Easter Bunny or something like that. There was an old Rankin-Bass animated thing. But you know what's funny is I was doing a DVD picks a couple weeks ago, and I just noticed it was just crappy Easter special after crappy Easter special on DVD. And that's when I did realize that there are no, aside from the very strictly religious Jesus-oriented Easter movies. And you have, of course, you have occasional, like, you have a Passover-oriented one, like the Prince of Egypt. But you don't really get, you don't get the Easter stories at all.
No. And it was cute. It looked good. I thought the candy factory looked awesome. Yeah. My kids just thought that was really cool. I would say to anyone listening, I can't imagine being an adult and going to this without kids and enjoying it. You'd be very creepy, and it's not good enough to say, yeah, you need to go out and watch this. But if you have kids, there are worse ways you can spend your time. So I'm going to say, it kind of rocks.
I'm kind of with you on the same boat. Kind of rocks. I took my oldest son to it. And he's 9, and he enjoyed it. And it's short. James Marsden, I think, is a genius actor. I think he's like James Franco, where he was like kind of completely existed under the radar a couple of years ago. Yeah. But he's had some fantastic roles recently, like in Enchanted and in Sex Drive and in even like 27 Dresses. He was really charming in. I think he upstaged Katherine Heigl. So I like James Marsden a lot.
Yeah, and he was really good at having that boyish charm.
Yeah.
You know, despite, I know he's not a teenager anymore, but he did a good job of capturing that wonder and amazement and all that.
He's like 45 years old.
But, like, you know, he played it off, and I thought he was adorable. I worry about this movie being dated because of the pop music choices. Mm. I don't know if it's going to go down as a classic, you know, for Easter or anything. It might.
I don't think they're out there. But. I don't think they're holding on to the longevity for this one.
Right. But, yeah, the kids were up dancing, like, when certain songs came on, you know, at my screening, the kids were jumping up, and so it was cute, and obviously kids loved it. So.
The story gets ridiculous at some points, and they're really stretching to try and make it work, but
yeah,
it's a harmless film. And speaking of a film that's not harmless, let's talk about Insidious. In this film, a family son falls into a coma, which seems to suddenly attract demons and ghosts in their home.
He's not in a coma. They don't know what to call it. I went into Dalton's room. There was something in there with him. I know someone who can help.
We took Trifield and EMF readings of the whole house. Wiring, alarm clocks.
I don't think bad wiring is the problem here.
I want to leave. I want to leave this house.
You saw this at Sunday, South By, correct?
I did see it at South By. I saw it at a press screening at South By, and I really enjoyed it. I had a blast. I was kind of smiling the whole way through. I said in my review, I've got a review up on Frothy Girls, but I said in my review that this is not one, a horror movie that's going to stick with you. It's kind of a quick ride, and like it's not like you're going to stay up that night, you know, scared. To me, it was just, it was like a carnival ride to me, and that's in a good way. It's kind of a forgettable, quick horror movie, and it was very fun. I thought it, the first two thirds looked a lot better than the last third. Okay. It felt like they ran out of money, which they probably did, because I think it was only about $1 million budget.
Well, I think part of it is the last third had more special effects to it. This is what I liked about the movie, in particular, is it was a real throwback to sort of like a 70s sensibility.
Yes.
Because after movies like The Grudge and that sort of thing, you had all these ghosts. It's ghosts and spirits. And they would always throw these wacky, crazy effects. And it's almost like overdone to the point that it was actually scary. They just put a person on set.
Yeah.
In costume or makeup. And you look at it and your mind immediately knows what it is.
Yeah.
But it's actually kind of, it's even scarier because it's more real when it's there. And I think some people are going to look at that and be like, that's totally cheesy.
Yeah.
Because there's a demon in it, and the demon looks like Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And I think, but it has these great jump scares. And they're like, when you see the ghost, there's one scene where they walk in a room and there's a face in the window. And normally a normal movie would like have it go, and the thing would move all over. No, it just sits there and you're just like, oh my God. And you're like, ah, and you kind of just kind of, it extends that
well,
thrill.
There, it was, you're kind of on edge the entire time you watch this.
Yeah.
And I noticed a scene like that in the kitchen. And they didn't make any big deal out of it. Some people saw it, some people didn't. But there was a ghost, like, in the corner of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And, they don't. It was, you're always just waiting for the next thing to happen. Really good acting, I thought. Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson. I like both of them. Yeah. And I loved the seance scene. How about you?
Oh, I love a good seance scene. You know, I mean, yeah.
But that was very original.
Well, you know, they had a great way of doing things, and I think, like you said, the whole thrill ride aspect of it, it's there to be loud, it's there to be scary, it's there to jump, make you jump.
Yes,
and I think it completely delivered on that. And what I loved, like I said, what I loved about it is it, like, it went back to an older sensibility. It used a lot of sound. It used a lot of practical elements. Gets higher on the special effects later, but what I found so fascinating about that part is it was just effectively done, and it was different enough from what we see out there. It wasn't Paranormal Activity.
I agree.
And it wasn't overdone special effects, and even the ending, which has more special effects, still they kind of, and it made it look a little cheap, kind of like you said. But I think that's sort of the way they were going, is that this is something you could have done with a $500,000 budget if you didn't have.
But
to
that's
pay
pretty
for
amazing, and especially to get the talent they did.
Yeah, so I don't.
I say it rocks.
I say totally rocks. This one, like I said, it's a great, great week for movies. We're going to come back and talk about a lot more stuff.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in our infamous middle segment of our infamous April Fool's Day show. We talked about the big movies, the three big movies that are coming out, which would be Insidious, Source Code, and Hop. Pretty much all the same kind of movie. I think they just... You know how they made Bug's Life and Ants? That's what these three are. No, I'm just kidding. there's a couple other ones that we want to talk about. This is actually an interesting time because there's so many that come into limited release that want to give a little bit of a shout out to. One of them is Trust, in which David Schwimmer directs a film about a teenage girl who's targeted by an online predator.
Who are you talking to?
I'm chatting, Dad. My friend Charlie from California. He's a junior and plays volleyball for his high school. He's smart and really funny. He's encouraging, he's sweet, and he thinks I'm beautiful.
Where are you? I'm sitting on a bench just outside.
Annie?
Annie, what happened? How old is he?
I'm angry, I didn't know what was going on.
You were attacked.
It wasn't like that.
You don't even know him!
You didn't even, you're not much aware of this movie, are you?
I wasn't until I got the show notes. It has not come to my city yet, so tell us about it.
Well, it's weird because it's like opening in like New York, LA, and Columbus. I have no idea where they're like, yes, online predators, let's open it in Columbus because that's where they all are. I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning was.
Yeah, that's kind of an odd choice.
I've got an interview with the star, the female, or the girl. She was actually 14 when they shot this.
Is she a known person?
She's relatively new. What's funny, she's like a photo double of Madeline Carroll.
Okay.
You know who Madeline Carroll is? She
no.
was in like Flipped, and she was in Swing Vote with Kevin Costner.
Okay.
But that's not this girl. It's just they look like exactly the same. Her name's Liana Liberato, and she... I did an interview with her. It's on Fat Guys in the Movies. You should be able to find a story about it on Film School Rejects. It's a here's the thing with this movie. It's her parts are really intriguing because when you see it from her perspective, because she plays a 15-year-old girl, and they really nail the emotional brittleness of a 15-year-old girl,
mm-hmm.
Which you're gonna have the joy of going through because you got girls.
Yes.
And that sort of that really intense manic depressant emotion. That is, well, you know, not always logical. So they really kind of nail that. When they finally get to the point, because of course she's approached by this predator, and then things happen, and then it kind of, it's no longer her movie. It becomes Clive Owen, who plays her father. It becomes his movie, and that's where I kind of lost interest, which is odd because it's the dad,
mm-hmm.
which you'd think I'd be able to relate to better, but. I lost interest from the parents' perspective because it's so daring to tell that from the kids' perspective. And I understand why Schwimmer did that, why he split that up so he can kind of maximize the audience and maximize the emotional impact. But I wanted to stick with the girl more because I was more interested in what was going on inside her head.
Yeah.
Than just the father's desire for revenge.
So is this a thriller, a drama, what genre is this?
I'd say it's a drama. It's not a thriller. I mean, it has some pretty crazy, you know, intense things happening in it, but it's much more of a drama. So, it's really, in a way, for a parent, it's kind of a horror movie because you sit there,
yeah.
'Cause this stuff happens. I mean,
yeah.
This
yeah.
totally happens. The only thing that bothered me about it is, as you're watching the movie, and you would not have a movie were they to plug these plot holes. But you're watching this, and I'm like going, what are these parents are idiots. They're not doing any sort of supervision. They're letting their 15-year-old daughter just chat with whoever they want, whoever she wants to, online, and giving out her phone number so she can get texts. And there's a scene where she goes to a high school, a big party, a big drinking party, And she comes home and they're just like, oh yeah, whatever. I'm like, well, you don't know who's there. You don't know whether there's parents there. I understand if they're 17 or 18 and they're already, you know, edging into that adulthood, but she's 15.
Yeah.
You know, what's real interesting is when I interviewed Liana, she was like, oh yeah, I text and stuff and I have friends and I have Facebook and Twitter and that. She's like, but my parents know all my passwords.
Yeah. Like, that's the way it should be.
As it should be, yeah.
Did you ever see Hard Candy?
You know, no, I haven't. That one did escape me. Although,
which is it's pretty hard. It's hardcore. I mean, it's more of a thriller.
I hear it gets a lot horror, a lot harder core than.
But it's similar. I mean, it deals with the same subject matter. Yeah. And Ellen Page is targeted by a predator.
Yeah. Isn't that Patrick Wilson?
Wilson? Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of the I think first time he was on my radar. So.
Oh okay. Yeah. So it's I'm going to say it kind of rocks. It has some problems structurally, but you know I give a lot of props to Schwimmer. David Schwimmer is really breaking out of his Friends persona, because mm-hmm. so many of the Friends are having such trouble doing anything else.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and Jennifer Aniston arguably has the best career, but it's like everyone's like, oh, another crappy Jennifer Aniston movie.
Exactly.
But after doing Run, Fat Boy, Run, this was an interesting choice because it's not comedy at all, and mm-hmm. it's a subject he's passionate about.
Yeah.
And so, you know, good
and
job.
And it's timely, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. So that's what I have to say. You have one you want to give a shout out to, don't you?
Yeah, I want to plug Rubber. I didn't actually see Rubber, but this was a fantastic fest movie, and everyone loved it. The screenings were sold out.
What's it about?
Tim League, who owns the Alamo Draft House, is a big champion of this movie. It's about a killer tire.
Oh.
And I know that sounds ridiculous, and I totally thought that too. I didn't even want to go to the screening. I had no desire, and everyone came out of the screening giving it 5 out of 5.
Really?
My writer gave it a 5 out of 5. We have a review on the site, but I just, you know, I like to plug these small indie horror films. So it's in limited release this week, and if you're a horror fan, you might want to seek it out.
Seek it out. It's probably in only about 20 cities or less.
Probably, but if it's in yours, you know, I've heard great things about it. So
okay, I'll have to check that one out. Oh, can I tell you one other funny thing about Trust?
Yes.
As hilarious as online predation is, when I interviewed Liana, I and then transcribing it and to transcribe it, one of the easiest things to do is just slow it down, mm-hmm. so you can type all the words without having to keep going back and rewinding. So I slowed it down to like 60%, and it sounded really creepy because I'm like talking like, well, what about this part of the movie?
Sounds like a monster.
Yeah, and then she sounds like a hermaphrodite when she responds, because she's like, because she, her voice is lower too. She's like, well, I think that blah blah. It's like the creepiest interview ever. So if you want to play with sound, you can go that and slow it down and hear me sound like a pervert. Excellent. Not that I say anything perverted.
Right.
Was that all you wanted to say about Rubber? I'm sorry, I stole your thing.
It is. I mean, I didn't see it. I've heard great things about it, and I'm anxious to see it.
Cool. Well, awesome. There's another one in limited release that's opening this week. I just want to give a real quick shout out to. It's called The Elephant in the Living Room. And I just saw this. I literally just watched it last night. They sent me a screener. It opens in, you know, like a half dozen or a dozen cities this week. You know, and then it changes cities next week to do sort of that rock and roll release. So you'd have to really look for it when it comes. But it's a fascinating documentary about people who have exotic animals and when they escape.
Which stuff, is just an awesome premise.
Yeah. It like points out that there are actually more tigers owned by people in Texas. There's more tigers in captivity, which includes people owning them, not just zoos. More tigers in Texas than there are in Africa.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding.
And so it has, and it spotlights this guy who's an animal control worker, and he's like from Dayton, Ohio, which is like an hour and a half from where I live. And there's a guy who kind of becomes one of their main focuses. This guy has two African lions, and one day they escape and just start attacking cars on the freeway.
Did they die?
Well, not from that. They eventually captured him. They finally captured him. But yeah, they were attacking cars.
Wow.
Every like 500-pound African lion, which, and there was up until I guess this year, before he left office, Governor Ted Strickland signed into law banning the ownership of exotic animals in Ohio, which is good, because, I mean, oh, if they have an iguana, big freaking deal. It's an iguana.
Right.
But if it's like a Burmese python that could eat your dog, that's a problem. And they have a whole scene where they go to a venomous snake trade show and buy like one of the most poisonous African snakes available. They just buy it for like $100 cash.
Wow.
And this is a widespread problem? Yes, no, but what it is you see a lot of like sort of like that redneck culture of, oh, isn't this cool and badass that I've got this?
Right.
And you're just like, one of these, you know. And here's the thing. This is how I kind of put it in perspective. These exotic animals, because they interview the people, and they're like, well, you can take care of them and hold them. They show this woman walking a Siberian tiger on a leash.
Smart.
And I'm like, and she's on her property, sure, but I'm like, if that tiger decides to go somewhere,
mm-hmm. it's you can't control it.
Going somewhere. I mean, this isn't even like a Great Dane, which you could just hold onto the leash and maybe drag. No, this is like a 500-pound tiger, the biggest cat in the world, and he's just walking it on a leash, you know? And these animals are like nuclear power in Japan.
I agree, and it never ends well. You always hear these stories about chimpanzees.
You know what's the first thing they go for? Eyeballs and genitals. That's the first thing chimpanzees go for. It's horrifying.
I hope you know that because of this documentary.
Yeah, well, and like I said, the reason I use the Japanese nuclear program, it is perfectly safe and reasonable until it's not.
Exactly.
Until something disastrous happens, because the Japanese nuclear power was really awesome. Until there was such a devastating earthquake that it screws up their safety mechanisms, and then you've got a meltdown. And you know, lions and tigers and bears are perfectly safe until they decide that they want to escape or I mean, I've got a dog. My dog's escaped.
Yeah.
But my dog's like 30 pounds. You know, it's going to hurt a squirrel, and that's it. So, I mean, it's bad enough that people own pit bulls and Rottweilers that maul children.
Yes.
So.
Well, not to mention that it's just cruel to have these animals contained in these very small areas that they should.
Well, yeah, because they're not domesticated. I mean, this is, again, my dog comes from a long line of domesticated animals. You're talking about an African lion that's literally one or two generations from being in a pride on the savannas of Africa.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a neat movie. Check it out if you can.
I'm definitely going to. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it opens in your neck of the woods, I think, in a couple weeks.
Awesome.
So, let's talk about last weekend box office winners. You know what? I'm not even going to make the Sucker Punch joke. Not the whole, where's Sucker Punch by Wimpy Kid?
like that.
But Diary of a Wimpy Kid came in first last week.
Yeah, and it made about $2 million more than its predecessor.
Yeah. Have you seen it? Do you see these movies?
No, my daughter has read all the books, and she's watched the first one, but I actually didn't go to that screening. I just couldn't fit it in last week, but, you know, she loves the books.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is I saw this. They didn't do screening locally for us, but it was spring break, so Friday, after I did my media appearances, I went out and took my kids to go see it, and granted, it was spring break in my suburb, so like everybody was off of school, and I'm sitting there in the movie watching, and I had gone and seen Sucker Punch the night before at a midnight show on OSU's campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more packed at the Diary of a Wimpy Kid screening. And the thing is, I said, after seeing how Sucker Punch did okay and was received okay by the audience, and then seeing how these kids reacted, I said, oh, this is totally going to win the weekend.
Yeah. Well, it has a built-in audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got all the fans of the books that go to the... They're going to turn out for any of these movies.
Yeah. And they're cute movies. They're very, very funny. And they're a bit irreverent. They're sort of more of that Nickelodeon, iCarly edge to them than like the more squeaky clean Disney Channel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, kudos to it. Almost 24 million. Almost 24 million for Diary of a Wimpy Kid and about 19 million for Sucker Punch.
Yeah, and Sucker Punch just got drummed with reviews.
Yeah. Did you see it? What did you think of the Sucker Punch?
I didn't see it because they didn't screen it here.
They didn't screen it anywhere. They were going to screen I said this to Rudy Obias on the show last week. They were going to screen it on, like, Tuesday. At least the early release I had was that they were going to screen it on, like, Tuesday in Cleveland, and then I contacted the rep, and I'm like, hey, I want to come see this, and she's like, yeah, it's not screening until like Thursday at 10.
Yeah, and they screened it at 10 here, but I was like, I'm not doing that. You know, yeah. I'm not going to try to crank out my review, and by the time I read the reviews, I was like, I'm not going to go see that.
Yeah, usually when it's a 10 o'clock screening on Thursday, that means there's like, they just want, it's a word of mouth screening.
Well, they're purposely not giving you time to get your review out.
Yeah.
If you're a written person, you know, if you write reviews. So yeah. I usually boycott those just on principle.
Yeah, I generally try and see as many as I can simply because I do the TV spots. And
you have, yeah, and you're in a different position.
I feel like such a douche when they're like, what did you see? Did you see this movie? I'm like, yeah, no, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah, you're in a different position, but yeah. That makes me angry when they don't give us time to do our reviews.
Yeah, but I think it's telling. It's very obvious when they do that.
Yeah.
So, and then Limitless came in a little bit less, and then it was like a horse race between Lincoln Lawyer, Rango, Paul.
But Battle LA. Limitless and Lincoln Lawyer both held in there from their previous week.
Yeah.
I think both dropped like 30% or less, which is pretty good.
About 20, actually.
Yeah.
20% from the previous week. And what I think is interesting about it is I liked both movies. Both surprised me. And again, I'm going to go back to the thing I said earlier. If you look at the top 10 films from last weekend, there is only one that's actually a sequel, and that's Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And, I mean, I guess if you want to say Red Riding Hood or The Adjustment Bureau or adaptations because they're kind of based on existing stories, but everything else is original material. So, you know, for all you naysayers out there, like, it's just about sequels and remakes, nope, it's not. It's actually we got a lot of options. Just nobody's going to see some of them, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's telling that Limitless and The Lincoln Lawyer both held in there. Obviously, they're getting good word of mouth.
Yeah, definitely. I think Lincoln Lawyers. I think people are expecting The Lincoln Lawyer to do decently because you got Matthew McConaughey behind it, his return to drama. But the fact that Bradley Cooper was able to sustain an opening is a good sign for him because it's sort of like, you know, he had the Hangover, but when the Hangover came out, it was like famous for being a movie that starred nobody anyone knew.
Well, it's an ensemble movie. I mean, you can argue that he was the lead role, but not really. I mean, that's an ensemble. He is definitely the lead role in Limitless.
Definitely. He's like a producer of that too.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to win this weekend?
Well, I'll just be shocked if Hop doesn't, especially with Easter coming up. Well, I just think any kids movie is kind of a slam dunk. Parents are always looking for something to take their kids to. I hope that Insidious does well.
Yeah.
Source Code. I bet Source Code and Hop will both come in close. And then
spoken with true conviction.
I know. Yeah. Listen to me be all ambiguous. Well, I was kind of forgetting about Source Code, but I bet they'll kind of split the box office.
Yeah.
And I think Insidious. Like, I've heard a couple people say they think Insidious is going to make a ton of money, but I don't think it will.
No. Not.
I think it'll be, if it does, it's going to be over time, not the first weekend.
I think you're right there. I don't think it's going to do well. I think it's going to be maybe in the top five. And
simply because we don't see that many horror movies do okay.
Yeah. Well, last year.
Paranormal Activity is about, and Saw. But this is an original. It's not a franchise. Like you said, it's not a sequel. So it's going to take a little time to get its legs. It'll have to go on word of mouth.
I think it's under a lot of people's radar. I also think this is a terrible time to release it. They should have released it in October. But sometimes they just want to drop it so they're not competing with like all the other stuff that's happening in October again. There were a couple of years where, like, I remember there was one year where all the horror movies came out like before March.
Yeah.
And nothing but like one of the Saw movies came out in October because no one wanted to compete with Saw. This is back when it was much stronger than, you know, like 6 and 7. But I think that that's a bad move on Insidious. I think Insidious is just going to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. And it was ready. I think it played at TIFF, which is back in the fall.
Last year, they had Nightmare on Elm Street come out. But that was based that rode on, you know, a recognizable premise, or people were reminded, people knew who Freddy Krueger was. They knew it had 10 movies before it, so that one already had kind of this built-in audience, and then it hit the teenage audience. Insidious isn't a teen horror movie, so it's not, you know, I thought it was great, but I have a feeling it's just not. It's going to perform soft.
I think so too.
I think Source Code's going to win. And the only reason I'm going to say that is because even though Hop is going to be good for kids, I don't think it's going to have it's not going to have the wider audience appeal. I think it's going to be like people who have kids who are under 10 and that's it.
Yeah, you're right there.
So whereas like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which $24 million is great for Diary of a Wimpy Kid because it cost $21 million to make, but that's still not that's not $100 million weekend or anything like that. So it's and Diary of a Wimpy Kid has a much wider. I think kids in junior high and even high school can appreciate it and wouldn't be mind seeing it with their family. Whereas I think Hop, you're going to get a lot of kids that are like 12 going to be like, yeah, I'm not seeing that.
Yeah.
So it's about the Easter Bunny. I don't want to see it.
So, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Hop is one of the movies that's going to do better as the weeks go by, because as you get closer to Easter, it will.
We got like 4 weeks till Easter. It's a late Easter season.
So, I bet that it'll build over time too.
Yeah, I think it's going to sustain better than like Marsh Needs Moms.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. We had mentioned a couple times in the show so far that you'd gone to South by Southwest. I want to kind of get your just general recap real quick. What was your favorite parts? What movies do you recommend to look for? All that kind of stuff.
Real quick. I was a little disappointed this year.
Really?
I think
how many years have you gone?
Well, this is only my second year. Okay. And I felt like this year there were one of the reasons I want to go to film festivals and why I like Fantastic Fest so much is because you get to see all these movies that you wouldn't have any opportunity to see.
But all the big ones are opening this week.
But exactly. Win-Win, Source Code, Insidious. Those and two Werner Herzog movies are coming out later this year, Tabloid and Cave of Forgotten. You know, I'm like, these are all movies I can see in the theater.
Yeah.
And so that's what was disappointing to me. They weren't bad movies by any means, but I'm like, I don't want to see something that's coming out in a week. I traveled to Austin to see movies I can't see. So that's my quick little soapbox. That being said, I did get to interview Paul Giamatti and Ty West.
Oh, really?
Which was really exciting. Ty West did House of the Devil. He has a new movie called The Innkeepers. Kelly McGillis and Sarah Paxton are in it. I really enjoyed this movie. If you liked House of the Devil, you should like this one because it's a slow burn. He really knows how to build up tension. This is a haunted house movie also.
Okay.
It's a haunted hotel. And so that's why it's called The Innkeepers. But it's slow going, but by the end, you are just white-knuckled. Because
Does Sarah Paxton, is she still trying to shake off her kind of squeaky clean image from like those... her earlier.
Well, she was in Last House on the Left.
Well, that's what I mean. I thought that was the whole thing. Is it's kind of like she's like, remember me from Aquamarine and this? Well, I'm going to get raped now.
Yeah. I mean, well, she's really funny in this. This is a very comedic horror movie. Mm-hmm. Lots of comedy in it. And she's really funny with, I can't remember the guy's name that she's in it with. And Kelly McGillis is in it. Uh-huh. But I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. And if you're a Ty West fan, you're going to like it.
Who's
but
Ty West? I'm actually going to...
He's
I'm
a director.
I'm
totally God, he's like a baby. Like, I interviewed him. I'm like, this guy is so young.
He's wetting his pants. He's like, excuse me, I need a diaper change.
It's so impressive. He did House of the Devil.
Which is funny because Woody Allen does the same thing now, only it's for different reasons.
Well, he's part of the Splat Pack, which are the new horror, directors.
Is that like newer than Eli Roth?
He's kind of in that same group.
Okay.
But he's a little newer.
Why do I feel so old right now?
I know. Well, and when I was interviewing, I'm like, seriously, this guy, I could be his mom.
Yeah.
Which, it's very impressive. So...
Did you smack him on the wrist for making such a scary movie?
No, I was like, good. I love horror movies. That's my thing. So, Being Elmo is a great documentary. It's about the puppeteer who voices Elmo.
Oh, okay.
On Sesame Street, you would like it.
One guy who does that. It's not like seven. I mean, how
it
hard is
it?
One
guy, and it's a black man, and he is such a neat guy. He always had a love of puppets, and it's a really interesting story, but it's very inspiring. He goes around to and does a lot of Make-A-Wish stuff. Like a lot of kids, their dying wish is to see Elmo. So it's a really great movie for anyone of any
age. Does like he just show up and be like, "What's up?" And they're like, "Ah, you're not Elmo."
It's a lot more interesting than you think it would be. Okay. My favorite film of the festival, I've been asked to hold my review, but I can talk about it. Was called Sound of My Voice.
Yeah.
This was a movie about a cult. Mm-hmm. And it's a woman who heads the cult. And everyone dresses in white, and they meet in this basement, and this couple decides to infiltrate them to kind of do an expose on cults, and they inadvertently become involved with the cult.
Okay.
And it's kind of one of those fiction movies that ends, and you're like, was she the real deal or not? She says she's from the future and that she's come back to give us wisdom and blah, blah. And she's this beautiful blonde. She's real ethereal and she's, you know, always dresses in white. And
wait, so is this a fiction piece or?
Yeah, it's a fiction.
Oh, okay.
And I loved it. I got to interview the directors the day after I saw it. And that was my favorite film of the festival. And my writer that I traveled with, she really liked it too.
Ah. So it gets a frothy girl seal of approval.
And we have tons of reviews up. If you want to go to our site, because there were three of us that went. So between the three of us, we've got at least 20 or 25 reviews up.
And the site again, and spell it, because it's...
Well, it's Frothy Girls with a Z. But if
Frothy Girls?
If you just type in Frothy Girls, it should come up.
Or just type Frothy Girls, what's up?
But we have a category on there for South by Southwest 2011. And you can click on that, and it'll bring up everything from the entire festival.
What do you think? Because kind of what you said, and I've kind of noticed is just kind of paying attention to festivals, where South by Southwest used to be the very, it was the slam dance of Austin, where it was, like you said, a lot of stuff you wouldn't see anywhere else. Would you say that Fantastic Fest is kind of taking over that a little bit? Whereas,
yeah, I've already made the decision I'm not going back to South by next year.
Because South by is,
Fest.
Yeah, it just sounds like South by being a little closer to how they promote films at Comic-Con.
It's too commercial now. It was too crowded. It's not, I mean, I don't want a dog on the festival, but it's gotten huge. And that's cool. I'm glad, but I just came to the conclusion this year that my time is better spent at other festivals.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, we're going to move on and do, we're going to do the Fat Guy Five, which is five unlikely holiday movies. It's in honor of, well, I guess in honor of Hop, where I mentioned there's plenty of Easter movies, but they're all about Jesus.
Yep.
There's very few like secular Easter movies. So this is sort of a surprising holiday film. You don't expect them to really capitalize on Easter movies. It's not a big thing.
Exactly.
Let's start off. What I'm going to first mention is slasher films, actually.
Excellent.
You said you're a huge fan of horror movies, aren't you?
I am.
The thing with horror movies is, especially the slasher movies of the 80s, were nothing but attaching it to some sort of holiday. You had the 70s and 80s, because you had My Bloody Valentine, you had Prom Night, April Fool's Day, Happy Birthday to Me, Black Christmas. All these horror films were attached to holiday films, and so you can pretty much, no matter what season it is, you can watch a slasher movie. Which one of yours is your favorite in terms of holiday slasher films?
You know, I liked April Fool's Day just because it was so different.
Really? I thought it was kind of a cop-out at the end.
I think I saw it on cable maybe sometime this year, and I enjoyed rewatching it.
Okay. You know one I always wish they made? Was Arbor Day. Do you read Mad Magazine?
I have a few times. But
there was one they made back in the, it was like 80, 81, and it was them doing a fake holiday-oriented horror film, and they called it Arbor Day, and it was about a crazy tree hugger who then chopped up young virgins with his chainsaw as he cut up the trees, and then his family cooked him into pizza.
I hope that some film rep is listening to the podcast right now.
If you were to go back, it was like the summer of 1981, Mad Magazine. If you were to go read it, you read it now, it'd be like, this would make a great horror movie.
Yeah, that's awesome. To be made into pizza?
Yeah. It's like it like takes off on Motel Hell. Do you ever see Motel Hell?
I was just going to mention that.
Yes.
I loved Motel Hell. And that was on AMC pretty recently. It was that like was just a couple months ago.
Wow, you know, AMC needs to redefine what they mean by classic.
It was in one of those, you know, maybe it wasn't AMC. It might have been the IFC. But anyway, I watched it really recently.
But AMC, like every Halloween, they always, like they did once, they do like the Halloween marathon of the Halloween movies. But they never do like the good Halloween movies. It's always like 6 through 8.
Which are just terrible, unwatchable.
And it's just, and it's no other, it's not classic. I mean, Halloween is a classic. I would even argue that Halloween 3 Season of the Witch is a classic.
Yes.
But Halloween 5 Michael Myers Takes a Poop is not exactly a classic.
No, it is not. We should probably throw in here Trick or Treat, too.
Oh,
you mean the one? That is a movie that was just horribly mishandled, and it never got a wide release, and it is an awesome Halloween movie.
You mean the most recent Trick or Treat?
Yes.
Okay. Because there was the one with Skippy from Family Ties.
I mean the one that just came out on DVD like last year.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, that was one that was just, and it was handled every step of the way. It couldn't have been handled worse.
Yeah, I wrote an article about it actually. I wrote about three horror movies that had been mishandled. Another one was All the Boys Love Mandy Lane.
Yeah. Well,
that never even came out.
Do you know, I got a great story about how All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. It was originally going to be distributed by the Weinstein Company.
Mm-hmm.
And the Weinsteins, they're idiots. I don't care. They made Miramax awesome. Yes, they discovered people like Kevin Smith, and like Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. Yes, they're responsible for bringing these people. Okay. That was then. This is now. They're idiots now. And anything kind of like post 2000 just reeks of stupidity from these guys. They did a screening of it, and they're really known for sort of like having like iffy screenings. Like they'd be maybe have a screening and then they get bad word. Well, what happened was they scheduled like the screening, and it was like they scheduled it on like a Wednesday. In every market, I knew other people in other markets, and they were screening like everywhere on Wednesday. And I remember talking to my rep, and I'm like, yeah, there's another screening that day at the same time, and it's a way bigger movie. No one's gonna come see this.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, oh, so she had them move theirs into Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So we in the Columbus market actually got to see it before anybody else would have. They had the screening at like 11 o'clock in the morning. I get an email, and afterwards you get the standard email, hey, what'd you think of the screening? And like an hour later, they pulled it from not just screening, but like from distribution.
Which, and it's a pretty good movie for a horror movie.
It's okay, but it's not terrible. You know, it's not worthy of just being buried the way it was.
No, it wasn't. And I thought it had an original premise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely deserved. I mean, it's made. It's already made. It's done. It's sitting on a shelf. Just release it already.
That's the way. They did the same thing with, like, Shaolin Soccer. Shaolin Soccer sat around in limbo for, like, 3 years before they actually released it. And it would have been a great movie, but then they like released it and they edited it and did this. That, again, Weinsteins. When I was doing independent film back in the early 2000s, everyone's like, ooh, you got to get into the Weinsteins. And in retrospect, I'm like, you know what? The last thing you wanted to do in early 2000 was to get your movie in the hands of the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
So, next one. Let's go to the next one on the list.
Well, mine is Bad Santa. I love this movie. It is so sick and wrong. and I love it. It's the anti-Christmas movie. And Billy Bob Thornton, he was just great in it. He just plays this total alcoholic guy that's playing Santa at a local mall so that he can case the mall to steal.
Yeah.
And it is awesome. I love it. It's a total black comedy. And it's just so, so wrong. And it's a great movie.
Yeah. I was not wild about Bad Santa, but I know it has a lot of love out there. Are you bothered at all by the remake or the sequel potential that's been rumored?
I mean, if they can capture the same mood that they did, I have no problems with it. I love that kind of humor. I just thought it was great. So
cool. The next one on the list is The Nightmare Before Christmas, and it's unlikely because it's one of those that people I don't think ever know what to put it in.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's a Halloween, it's as much a Halloween movie as it is a Christmas movie.
Yes.
And what was brilliant about it is I think when they released it originally, it came out at the end of October. It came out right before Halloween.
I think you're right.
But it was able to sort of dovetail into the Christmas season as well. A brilliant movie. It's really kind of lived. And I actually saw an early 3D conversion version of this. And it actually is pretty well done in terms of post-converted 3D. And you can catch that in the theaters now and then. But yeah, it's a great movie. This was your suggestion. I just stole it from you.
Yeah, it was good. My next one is Love Actually. Anyone that reads my stuff knows I'm not a chick flick person by any means, and I do not generally like romantic comedies. This is one that I do like. It's a great ensemble romantic comedy, and it's set against the holidays. I think most of the actors are British. I think it takes place over,
It takes place in Britain, yeah. Most of them are, but like, I mean.
But it's just, you know, it's a sweet movie. There's a whole bunch of couples in there that you really want to root for. And it really, anytime I put this on, it gets me in the holiday spirit. And it's not typically considered a Christmas movie, but it definitely gets me in the spirit.
I'll tell you, though, whenever I hear people give their list of favorite Christmas movies, inevitably you're going to hear at least a couple people say Love Actually.
And, you know, if you're not a genre fan, this is the one to probably watch. It's pretty tolerable.
It's not a typical romantic comedy. It's not a standard rom-com. So,
yeah.
It's probably the most pleasant I'm not a rom-com movie that normal critics will say is a rom-com. Like something like Sideways. I remember when Sideways came out, people were like, I heard a lot of critics being like, well, I don't like romantic comedies, but I like Sideways. I'm like, yeah, Sideways isn't a romantic comedy. It has a romance and it's a comedy, sure, but it's not a romantic comedy.
Exactly.
So, all right. Last one. This again, I'm throwing this to you. You completely made this list. I threw in the slasher films at the beginning, but
last one is Die Hard. Which is another awesome, it's set in the holidays. It takes place on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. So you got the Christmas trees in the background and the Christmas music, and it's a nice juxtaposition of what's going on in the movie, which is, you know, all this hardcore action. And I just think it's a great movie to pull out at Christmas time.
Yeah, again, that's one that when people say their favorite Christmas movies, Die Hard throws up on shows up on a list all the time, as well as another one that shows up that a lot of people say they love as a Christmas movie is Gremlins.
Yeah, I saw that too. But Die Hard holds up really well too.
Yeah,
I think you can watch it now, and it's weird to see Bruce Willis with hair. But aside from that, I think it has held up really well.
This was his first big movie. I don't know if people don't remember this because they've always think he's been an action star. It's kind of like I just recently reviewed Rain Man on Blu-ray, and people forget that was the first movie that people took Tom Cruise seriously.
Yes, it was.
And Die Hard was, again, the first movie. And there's even a joke in there. And again, people don't get this joke nowadays. If you're like 20 and you're watching Die Hard, you don't get this. When he makes a comedy, he's like, oh, it must be some bartender or something like that. It refers to John McClane that way. Because he was a bartender.
And he got discovered and put on Moonlighting.
Yeah.
How he made his break.
Yeah, and Moonlighting was such a whimsical thing, and so this was he was not the action star until this movie.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons I love it so much, because I really liked Moonlighting, and I liked him in it, and it was really cool to see him in his first, you know, he totally carried this movie, and convincingly. So.
Well, I like seeing movies where the actor or actress has something to prove. They're actually, like, I saw recently Moonstruck on Blu-ray, and Nicolas Cage, this is really before he really was known by anybody. And he's actually acting. He's not phoning in a performance. And he has some performances that he acts in nowadays. But he's won the Oscar. He's been the $20 million actor. But you get so many performances that are like Ghost Rider which I thought that was okay. I liked the Ghost Rider and I liked the National Treasure movies. But I'll admit to anybody, you know, that he's totally phoning in his performance on those. And that's what I like about Die Hard is it's Bruce Willis actually saying, no, I can do this. Let me throw it down. Whereas now he just kind of, again, just phones it in. Even as much as I love Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, he does phone that in.
Yes.
So I guess that's it. We better wrap this up because I think we've talked enough about crazy, crazy stuff.
I believe so too.
All right. Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are moving along and finishing up our big fat April Fool's Day special. And if you have been one of the smart people and figured out how to reverse this and get it to sound right on your computer, or if you just were lazy and waited until Saturday when I posted the full-blown thing, or if you're listening on the radio in Wyoming during the weekend and you want to let us know the code word You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456 and say, hey, you guys were in reverse. That's what happened. And the code word is, do you remember what it is, Shannon?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. You don't have spelling as long as I mean, if you spell it with an X, if you spell it like XLMPQ, I don't know what that means. You got to at least make it sort of sound look like Sasquatch. So let me know what it is. That's what it is, and you will win a brand new, relatively recently released Blu-ray. So that's that. What time is it now for? What's it time
it's
for
time
now?
For the world famous DVD roundup.
Ooh, that was the awesome Lucasfilm sound effect. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. I've got a couple of picks for this week. I think we're going to argue about Fair Game.
I'm pretty sure we are.
Which, you know, the movie made me real angry, and I thought it was very sanctimonious, and it pissed me off. But I have to argue that it was well made, and okay. I thought it was well acted. Even though I didn't really like it that much, I thought it was an excellently made movie.
Really? My biggest problem with it, and this actually is my stinker of the week, it did not make my top 10 worst list of 2010, but it was probably like number 11 or 12. And the biggest reason is, first of all, it just felt so biased.
It's very biased, but
it's all Valerie Plame's story. Well, this is why I don't think it's well made. And the reason I don't think it's well made is the cinematography. Doug Lyman, who has helped sort of pioneer the Bourne Identity
yes.
version of cinematography that was then quote-unquote perfected by Paul Greengrass. It's just, hold the damn camera steady, for crying out loud. Just hold it steady. There's a scene in there where Valerie Plame and her husband are arguing in a hallway, and they're literally, one standing on the stairs, the other one is literally standing still by a door. And the camera's moving around like Michael J. Fox is holding it.
I'm going to have to revisit it. I don't remember that, but it's been a long time. I mean, I haven't seen this since it was out in theaters, so.
So, that's my biggest beef with it. And then, like I said, it was so, what bothered me about it was just so, and you're right, it was sanctimonious, it was very biased, it was preachy. And the whole point was it's just like, it was so extreme, it was so obvious that it was like, well, this is Valerie Plame's story. And it's completely her story, and we're just going to do this to make it all make me sound so awesome. And how could this? And it's just like, no, this is way more muddled than you're presenting it. And this is way politics does not work this nicely.
Well, and it was interesting when I went to the screening. You know, I'm not going to get into politics at all, but everyone was taking this as absolute word.
Yeah,
and several people, when they were commenting to the rep after the screening, they were like, this is a very important movie. Everyone in America should see it. And I'm like, you guys are saying the exact same thing that you're saying we shouldn't do with other things. Like, you shouldn't take everything at its face value. You know, you shouldn't just absolutely take something as being the gospel. And it's like, this is a fictionalized account of somebody's life. Yeah. And it disturbed me that a lot of people came out of it absolutely saying, this is God's truth, you know?
Yeah.
So
anyways, what's your other pick for this
week? My other is All Good Things, which I don't think got a very large theatrical release.
Is that Ryan Gosling?
Ryan Gosling and
Kirsten Dunst.
Yes, sorry. Totally slipped my mind. And this is a true story about a sociopath guy in New York who was extremely wealthy. He ended up marrying kind of below his socioeconomic status, and that was Kirsten Dunst. You know, she disappears at some point. It's a very well done movie. I had a screener of this or I never would have seen it.
Uh-huh.
Ryan Gosling is solid as usual. I thought it was a good performance by Kirsten Dunst. So I think it's an intriguing movie and it's an intriguing story if you know anything about it. So
cool. The ones I want to highlight is, you got Tangled. Tangled is a great, you know, Disney princess movie. 3D CGI, so it sort of takes it's really abandoning the Sully animation, which is sad, but it still looks great. It's available on Blu-ray and 3D Blu-ray and everything. Also Black Swan, which is one you don't show the kids. you know, Natalie Portman wins the Oscar. It's a great movie. I really enjoyed it. Probably Darren Aronofsky's best, in my opinion.
This was my number one of 2010.
Cool. And then, oh, speaking of cool, the last one is Cool It. If you haven't seen this, this is a documentary about, and I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name. He's like Dutch or something, but he did the Skeptical Environmentalist, and it really kind of takes a look at the environmental movement and sort of like the crazy, insane claims and doom and gloom. And he kind of puts it in, he's like, well, let's hold on. Let's look at this from a more realistic perspective. Are these things happening? Yes. But, you know, what can we do about it? Is it going to be as extreme and crazy? Are these claims actually true? Are these claims valid? And it really kind of puts the environmentalist movement into perspective. So
yes. And we have a review of this on our site.
Cool. Well, check it out. We got to get going here, but we both said Hop was kind of rocked. We both said Insidious rocked. Both said Source Code rocked. I said Trust kind of rocked. Next week, Arthur Hanna, Soul Surfer, and Your Highness. Remember, go to fatguysatthemovies.com or go to email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com, or call us at 740-205-6456 with the code word Sasquatch. Thank you, Shannon Hood
Thank
from frothygirls.com for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.